The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You know all those draft boards and screens you see on your Twitter feed right now, if you're in the fantasy baseball world at all? Who do we have to blame for that? Our good friend Justin Mason, here to talk TGFBI with me here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by our good friends at Underdog and Fantrax. Please support their endeavors and whatever they do, because they're sponsoring us, so we thank them for that. It's yogurt cast time. It's time to talk the TGFBI, or as I like to call it, the Yogurt League. So noted because my brother used to work at a frozen yogurt shop called TGBY. I think they still exist somewhere in the Midwest. But anywho, we're talking TGFBI. We're posting draft picks and having a good time doing it. Here with Justin Mason, home of host of the TGFBI, proprietor of. You can find him everywhere, including Sleep on the Bus podcast, the TGFBI podcast, Friends with Fantasy Benefits, Fangraphs, you name it, he's there. Justin, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff. It's always a pleasure to come on and talk about yogurt.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I'm hungry now already. How many leagues do we have this year for TGFBI?
We have 29 leagues this year, so 435 participants. It is been a lot of fun. People are really, really excited about it, except for those people who are in really, really slow leagues that are not moving very fast. I saw one league I don't think has even made it to the top 60 picks yet. So,
oofta, as we would say my Scandinavian descent there. That's brutal.
Yeah. Draft Cheat sent me a little message. He goes, "I will never forgive you for putting me in this league."
Oh no.
This year wasn't my fault though. You know, NFBC randomized it all. You got what you got. Don't blame me. Blame the powers that be over at the NFBC.
Okay.
Our friends over there.
Yeah. And I love their draft room. I love their platform. I love running leagues there, but yeah, it's sometimes you'd like to have a little control, and that's the trade-off we make there. So it goes. Mm-hmm. I had maybe not that extreme of a league in the past, but this year I don't. We are in like the 12th league, 12th round. Not the fastest, but definitely not the slowest either.
Yeah, my league is currently about to finish up the 17th round, but yeah, I think when people are drafting with me, they tend to move a little bit faster as to not feel like they're holding up the person who runs the show. So I never get stuck in a slow league.
2 years ago, we were in the same league and there was, there were a couple of offenders, but then you just laid the hammer down and they got better. But I forget the tout, but I was drafting second and someone was first and we had the 4 hour clock. And I think he took 3 hours to make that first pick and then overnighted the second pick. Which just the worst tactics of all time there. Hey, you never know when a new closer is going to be named, but you know what? I'm always of the firm belief of just make fast picks, just keep the draft going. It's enjoyable that way, but I understand. I'm trying to be good about not like pace shaming people in the draft. I maybe felt a little guilty of that at the FSGA draft that's ongoing right now because we got 12 runs in live in Vegas in 2.5 hours. And then took a week to get to 2 more rounds as a slow draft. Ooh. So, yeah, we got better over time, but it was tough.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. I'm I'm usually pretty okay with people taking their time. One, because in TGFBI, there's actually no added benefit to finishing early. The longer the draft goes, the more information you're going to have. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, I drafted Joe Musgrove in the sixth round. It felt like a really good pick. And an hour later, they announced he broke his toe. So, you know, like had my draft been a little bit slower, I wouldn't have drafted Joe Musgrove. So, I know it's frustrating, but we also have people, you know, the draft cheat league, I think, is the league where a guy's from Argentina and there's a guy from England. So, like, the time zone difference
that doesn't work well together.
Yeah. No. It's just unfortunate that that's the way it worked out. So,
plus, England and Argentina hate each other too. So, there's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That going for you, which is not nice, but so it goes. So, TGFBI stands for the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational for people who are unfamiliar with it. It's a way to bring those of us in the fantasy community together. And it also there's a charitable component too.
Yeah. So it's 435 people. Vast majority of them are from the industry. I do run satellite leagues for people who are just kind of, you know, regular Joes who want to try to win their way in. In order to get in those, you make a small donation of any size, could be a dollar, could be whatever. And then you compete, you win the league, you get in. And so we're able to then raise money from the participants of TGFBI, the satellite leagues, and then donate to a charitable cause. So usually half the money goes to a charitable cause of my choosing. This year, we are raising money for Dan Strafford's family. Dan Strafford, an amazing person in our industry, yeah. Lost his wife to cancer very, very recently. And then the other half.
Three girls.
Yeah.
Brutal. Yeah.
I think 12, 8, and 5 are their ages. And, you know, I'm a father of, you know, a 12-year-old and a 4-year-old. I can't even imagine what Dan's going through. So we're gonna raise some money. Last year we raised money for Emily Walden. You know, year before we raised money for a charity in my local area. So, it's always a great way to kind of use the excitement of fantasy baseball season for a good cause, right? So that's what Podapalooza is about. That's part of what TGFBI is about. And I just appreciate the industry as a whole kind of championing TGFBI and making it as successful as it is.
Yeah, between you and Scott Fish with the Scott Fish Bowl, I mean, mm-hmm. I think we're in great hands as far as that goes, so putting our best foot forward. Hey, do me a favor, shoot me the link to the fundraiser for Dan's fundraiser, and I'll post it in the chat room while we're talking here. And I can put it on the YouTube page too later on. So we'll hopefully drum up some business that way because Dan, I mean, he's a wonderful guy, first of all, but also he's in a time of need now, and it'd be nice if we could help them. So we'll do that. We're talking about TGFBI. We got Justin Mason here. You can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB, and you can find out all this information as well. If you're just listening to a podcast after the fact and not live streaming with us here, or even live streaming after the fact with us, not so live streaming, lots of ways for you to find out how you can contribute and help. Let's talk about putting together these leagues. I mean, it's just got to be a monstrous process there. How many hours do you estimate every year do you get just setting up the leagues, putting people in leagues, making sure who's in, who's not in?
I mean, it's already started for next year. I've already, you know, posted the links for people to sign up for 2024. But usually around October, I start putting about 5 to 10 hours a week in. And then from January on, it's about 10 to 15 hours a week. Until drafts start. Once the drafts start, you know, I can really hand it over to NFBC. If there's any problems, I just, you know, I talked to Derek at NFBC, and he's amazing at what he does. NFBC is amazing what they do. But yeah, I mean, it's just a ton of work because you have to make sure nobody gets left out. You have to make sure that everybody who is applying qualifies. So I get to read a link from pretty much everybody in the industry every year, which is kind of cool and different. It's a ton of work, but it's an amazing opportunity for a lot of people in the industry, including myself. And so it's definitely well worth the time and effort I put in.
Yes, exactly. So I'm so glad to hear that because I know it is yeoman's work. I know that you're doing that, and you're doing it for the good of our fantasy industry/community. I think it, you know, I like saying community if possible, because there's some people that aren't making any money off of doing producing fantasy content and others that are just doing it, you know, on the side. If they make some scratch, great. And we want to support all those people. I'm stupid lucky that I've been able to do this for a living since 1999, Justin.
Wow.
And in the fantasy world. But and we started RotoWire in 1997. So I've been doing it full time, though, since then, which is just crazy. So I've seen so many changes in the fantasy world. You know, we used to get excited and ESPN or CBS would mention the concept of fantasy. We're like, oh, look, there's a fantasy article. Oh, there's Keith Law. I'm so excited. And I love Keith. I've been friends with Keith since 1998, actually. I met him at the first time we got invited to labor. And it's just, there's always been that welcoming spirit. Whether it's like John Hunt invited, you know, shining a light on new sites, Baseball Weekly back when that was a thing. You know, people like Greg Ambrosius or Ron Chandler or Lenny Melnick have all been so like welcoming and pushing us up. So I like what you're doing. You're helping other people do the very same thing.
Yeah, it's just a really good opportunity for some people who, one, it may not get noticed otherwise in the industry. You know, Kenyatta Storin has been a guy who, you know, he's, I think, the all-time like leader in the historical standings of TGFBI. Mm-hmm. And like, I think his profile has grown a little bit since TGFBI. You know, Chris Clegg started doing stuff in the industry, started writing in the industry because he wanted to get into TGFBI.
Nice. You know? I like it.
And so like hearing stories like that, where it's like, hey, people are getting a platform or a bigger platform because of something like TGFBI is such a cool, cool part of the whole thing for me. Yeah.
So TGFBI is modeled after the NFBC. It's a slow draft though, 5x5, 30 rounds. We will have fab. It's similar to the main event, except we're not playing for big cash prizes is the only difference. So is that your favorite type of format to play?
Yes and no. I think it's my most common format played nowadays. I play it mostly on NFBC. I still have a soft spot for in-person auction drafts. So I'm in the Tau Ors mixed auction league. Like that to me is my favorite kind of format.
Yeah, I love live drafts, live auctions. Yeah.
You get to put together your team any way you want. You can use weird strategies if you want. You can trade if you want. So I think that's kind of my preferred format, but the NFBC has quickly become, because the competition level has just quickly become the place I play the most.
Yeah. There's something to be said about being in person too. So I like that. I do like the, you know, an auction, trying to change your cadence on nominations. I like changing just how you do it. There's so many things to be said for that. Let's talk about some of the results here. Where can people find the results to, you know, find like ADP in TGFBI?
Yeah. So if you go to TGFBI.com, I've got a link to every single league, their draft order, and then links to the ADP board. And so if you want to find, you know, your favorite fantasy analysts, you know, what he or she is doing in their draft, you can, you know, scroll down, find, you know, whoever's in league six, and then, you know, click on the board and look at it live. And there's also an ADP sheet. Having a little issue with Tyler O'Neill for some reason, not wanting to show up on the ADP sheet. And so I'm having to input that one manually, but
feeling shame.
Yeah. I've got a, you know, small, but very, very dedicated staff at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, helping me kind of input those. And then Brian Jenner, has been scraping some of the data for me so I can kind of copy and paste to kind of catch up when we fall behind. But it should be all updated by tonight, with pretty much all the picks. And so, if you're looking for ADP, I like this ADP a little bit better if you're doing something like a main event than maybe a draft champions, because those are 50 round draft and holds, so a little bit different format. So, and it kind of gives you an idea like, hey, we're starting to see those starting pitchers move up, and we're starting to see some of those kind of hot names start to move up in the same way that we're definitely going to see start happening here in the next few weeks.
Which riser caught your eye the most?
Oh, that's a good question. I think some of the closers just, you know, I thought like some of the closer prices would start to come down, and we're not really seeing that. You know, you've got, you know, still Edwin Diaz and Class A both pretty much going in the second round. I've been surprised. the names that have surprised me the most is the ones that aren't going higher than I thought they would. Like, I really thought that, I know that DeGrom's dealing with that side issue, but like, I really thought a guy like DeGrom would be a really popular kind of second round pick for somebody in just about every league, because he's got that upside that you shoot for with an overall, even though I don't think that's really the best way to build an overall team.
Which is funny you say that, because in my league, Jacob DeGrom went at 2.8. He went one pick ahead of Gerrit Cole.
Wow. I saw him go in the fourth round of the league and I was shocked. You know, and that's kind of that's the real cool thing about the ADP is like,
yeah,
you see some of these weird picks where you go like, oh wow, like Adolis Garcia went at the beginning of the first round in a league.
Yeah.
So they're beginning of second round in a league. And you're like, whoa.
So within one league, 1 week, I saw the gamut between with DeGrom. I saw him at 2.8, you know, AKA pick 23. And I saw him at pick 60 in labor, where Fred mm-hmm. Zinke had to take him. He didn't even want to take him. He was hoping someone would take him in front of him. He was all set to say, I'm going to take Dylan Cease instead. And nope, someone took Cease. Tim McLeod took Dylan Cease one pick before him at 60. So you can see like he's going to be definitely one of those linchpin sort of player. I mean, players where he can break some drafts or he can make some drafts. If you get him at pick 60 and he turns in a second round or better effort, oh boy.
Yeah, Cease is an interesting one too. Cease is a guy that I've seen drop like tremendously in one of my drafts. And same with Shane Bieber, you know, and I'm not a big fan of either of them, but I think in my draft, both of them went outside the top 70 picks.
Wow.
I'm like, well, at that point, like they become huge bargains. I don't care what you think of them because they've just the track record is too good on those guys. And so I think you're really seeing, you know, people plant flags on guys and then entire rooms being like, I don't want to touch that guy. Corbin Carroll's one that is going way up the board in some leagues, and that's a real interesting one. I wonder if it's just because he, you know, steals bases so quickly in spring training, it just makes everybody look silly. So the hot names are gonna start really pushing up the boards.
Yeah, they are. Corbin Carroll did go in my league, I felt, yeah, fourth round he went.
Yeah,
that's pretty early. Mm-hmm. That would be pick like 51, 52 at latest, 51, 52 ish. And meanwhile, Shane McClanahan dropped to the fourth round in this league. So I did notice a certain dropping in just starting pitchers generally. I had a choice between Dylan Cease and Shane Bieber at pick 58. I went Cease, which I almost never do, but I felt like I wanted to get a lot of K's to start. And I trust Cease a little bit more than Bieber when it comes to the strikeouts.
Yeah. I just have such fear of Shane Bieber. Like, I know that he has continued to produce in spite of like red flags with velocity and injury and things like that. But, and I'm not usually the guy that says this, but I would rather be out a year early than out a year too late on him. And I
can appreciate that. I feel the same way.
I just can't pull the trigger. C scares me a little bit too, just because of like, the two pitch thing and the lack of command and control. And when I'm like drafting an ace, I just want a guy to be giving me five categories. And I feel like he can really hurt you at whip sometimes, which is a little bit underappreciated in the fantasy game sometimes. So I haven't drafted Cease, but he almost got to me in, I want to say it was like the fifth round, I think. Yeah, in the fifth round, I believe it was. And like, I was super, super tempted to just like pounce on him because I felt like at that point, it might just be too good of value to pass up. But luckily for me, he was sniped right in front of me.
Yeah, you were mentioning Corbin Carroll earlier. So my league was the min pick at 51, max pick of 84. Are you willing to pay, let's say somewhere in the, we'll average that out, somewhere in between, like let's call it like 70. Are you willing to pay that sort of price for Corbin Carroll?
I haven't been yet. Okay. I'm becoming more and more tempted. And so I did like straight on projections this year, you know, very similar like you by hand or in a spreadsheet. I don't have a, you know, fancy dancy, you know, algorithm or anything. And my projections have him like a little bit below where ADP is, but yeah. I've been very tempted to add some more steals, which I think will probably ratchet him up above ADP.
Also, it kind of depends on playing time too. How many like at bats you give for him, how many games. I mean, Arizona mm-hmm. does have a crowded outfield. They got to find ways for Alec Thomas to get in there. He might start the year in the minors for crying out loud, but like Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is obviously there now. But you're eventually going to see a very nice young outfield out there with Thomas, with Carroll. They could be fun. They could have three center fielders out there at some point in time. And that might be by design too. That might be a team build thing.
Yeah, I just don't know that I'm going to end up with Carroll very often, even though I like him and I've got him in some dynasty leagues, which is like the perfect place to have him.
Yes.
But it's mostly because by the time I get to where I would be willing to take him, he's one, either gone, or two, I already have enough speed. Because I've been, Randy Rosarena has been one of my kind of must gets this year in drafts.
Okay.
Cedric Mullins is always the backup plan when someone snipes me on a Rosarena. So like, I always have a fair amount of speed already by the time I get to Carroll. So usually I'm going starting pitching at that point or trying to grab a closer. And so I just haven't ended up with him.
I've been landing with his teammate, Jake McCarthy, a lot, except for in TGFBI, DJ Short sniped me by one pick, which is not a recording, 'cause he's been doing that a lot in this draft. Good player. And he grabbed McCarthy one round before I did, but I had to be responsible and take a pitcher there anyhow, 'cause I kind of pushed back my second and third starters. So I don't know about save me for myself, because I was annoyed. I wanted McCarthy, but instead I got another starter, which I needed to. So it worked out okay. But yeah, that McCarthy is another fun one there. Really fun second half last year.
Yeah, I mean, he won people leagues. And if you were the type of person who was out of it by midseason and went over to football, you might have completely missed what he did in the second half.
Exactly.
I feel like they're going to give him a shot to lead off with his job. I think you're right. I think Alec Thomas probably goes down to the minors, but I also feel like he has a really, really small leash. Like if he doesn't hit well early on, he's going to get replaced very, very quickly.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if like Arizona would trade a guy like McCarthy for a starting pitcher, like why a Trevor Rogers for McCarthy deal hasn't been worked out or something to that effect. They just have so much outfield talent and they could really use like another like middle of the rotation starter. So, or maybe a guy with upside, like they got in the Zach Allen trade for Jazz Chisholm. I've got a little bit of concern, but the market hasn't overrated McCarthy at all. Like I really thought coming in, McCarthy was going to start pushing up the board super high to the point where he would be unaffordable. But I think he's very, very fairly priced.
Yeah. Arizona is a very interesting team. I mean, they've got some young starters that could be fun. Dre Jameson, Ryan Nelson, Brandon Fatt, all three of these guys could be up and in the rotation by the end of the year. I mean, who is Zach Davies and to stop anyone? Madison Bumgarner's got the contract and the name and the history, but man, he hasn't been good lately. We could see a pretty rapid transition.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. I'm not predicting this by any stretch of the imagination, but I would not be surprised if they outdid the Dodgers this year. The Dodgers are like another injury or two away, and you know, it's a team filled with older guys now, from really falling behind an up and coming Diamondbacks team. I think Diamondbacks are already better than the Giants, which is hard for me to say as a Giants fan, but if the Diamondbacks were the like breakout team out of nowhere, it would not surprise me this year. They've got like all the right pieces in place.
Indeed. We're going to talk about a couple other big news items this spring and how that's affected TGFBI ADP and a whole lot more. But first, we got to talk a couple notes from our sponsors here. The fantasy baseball season is underway, and there's no better place to play than Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy baseball. Right now, Underdog has MLB best ball tournaments live, including the Dinger, which has $500,000 in total prizes. In best ball, all you do is join a contest, draft your team, and that's it. There are no waivers, no trades, and no in-season management. Draft 20 rounds of players and get the cumulative scores, best cumulative scores in your starting lineup. Three pitchers, three infielders, three outfielders, one flex each week of the regular season. Getting started is simple. Go to underdogfantasy.com, sign up with promo code RWMLB, and not only will Underdog double your initial deposit up to $100, but you'll also get 6 months of our RotoWire subscription for free. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy, promo code RWMLB. Draft your $100,000 Dinger team today. I'm here with Justin Mason. We are talking all things TGFBI. We're also in talking about some of the how it affects our draft prep, how it affects our world. Unfortunately, Tyler Glasnow is hurt again. The oblique injury, grade 2 oblique strain, 6 to 8 weeks is what they're saying. Rapid tumble, although not as far as you might think in some cases. I saw, so I'm again, I can only use my league as one sort of guide, and we got the ADP to kind of guide us otherwise. But in my league, Tyler Glasnow still went in the ninth round. So before pick 150, I think it was pick basically 125. I think that strikes me as a little bit early. What say you?
I mean, that would have been too early for me prior to the oblique injury. you know, there's no worse feeling as a fantasy player than drafting a guy and then him immediately getting hurt. So I think there's no worse feeling in the industry as an analyst than like talking down a guy or being like, you shouldn't be drafting him. And then he gets hurt and everybody gets out of, you know, the way of the oncoming train that was going to hit him eventually anyways.
Scott and I were talking about that, actually. It's like, we can't say that, you know, and all that, but yeah, it's like, I'm not in on him. Why? Yeah.
He's a guy who's just never been able to stay healthy. And there was this idea by a lot of smart people way smarter than me in the industry, that he should be like a top 20 starting pitcher this year, that they were going to let him go, that he was going to reach it, you know, the Tommy John honeymoon that, Jeff Zimmerman and, you know, Saras talk about. And I get the idea of the Tommy John honeymoon, but that doesn't negate all the other injury issues he's had over the course of his career, which has been, you know, a major problem for him. And so people projecting him for 140, 150, 160 or more innings, I think we're fooling themselves into believing something could happen, as opposed to, you know, really projecting things properly. If you've already drafted him, I'm sorry, he's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks. And that's on top of what else he probably misses throughout the year. But if you haven't drafted him, this is your sign to not take the discount, because there is probably not a discount, you know, deep enough that it's worth it.
Let's look at the other Rays pitchers while we're at it. So I got sniped on Jeffrey Springs this round. I was hoping to get him in the 12th round coming back. I always thought that I was kind of a high guy on Jeffrey Springs, and now I'm finding I'm not. I'm finding that there are others. I've seen him go as low as 134, I think, in your contest here. He just went in the 12th round in my draft, so I will not be getting him in League 17, unfortunately, but and, you know, starting it, we're at that point where not everybody has gotten that far. So you're seeing some gaps. But like, for instance, Glasnow, his is going to even drop even farther. But I like Springs. I like Rasmussen both. I think Rasmussen might go a little bit before. Yeah, like maybe 8 slots more by TGFBI, by Yogurt ADP than Springs does. But I like both of these pitchers.
Yeah, I do too. And it's surprising to see Rasmussen going a little bit higher, because I think in Draft Champions, Springs has been going a little bit higher. And so they've kind of flip-flopped a little bit. I'm on board with Rasmussen going a little bit higher than Springs. I just believe it a little bit more, but it doesn't mean I'm out on Springs by any stretch of the imagination. What we saw from him and then getting the contract extension, a little bit of confirmation bias, I think, tells me he's probably going to be pretty good. And the, you know, Rays now need to rely on these guys, especially early on in the season, in a way that they may not have needed to with Glasnow being healthy. So I know there's talk that, oh, maybe Rasmussen or Springs gets limited a little bit, but they can't limit every guy, and they're gonna, you know, probably play it pretty safe with Zach Eflin, considering they've got him on a long-term contract and he's never really been able to stay healthy for long stretches of the season. So I think Rasmussen and Springs are both going to get an opportunity to kind of go deep into games and win a bunch of games on a really good race team.
For sure. Got a request from Joel Hennard to ask about Peter Fairbanks. I actually tweeted about him in my league. He went at pick 130, much to my chagrin. I get the idea that Pete Fairbanks is no longer going to be a bargain for people. That was like my favorite, like 12th or 13th round second closer, and now he's ninth round second closer. And the problem with Pete Fairbanks is twofold: one, team, and two, his previous durability issue. So he's gotten pushed to the point where I really don't want to have to be paying that sort of price for him.
Yeah, I think I'm priced out on him, unfortunately. I like him as a pitcher. I think he's very good at what he does, but he just pitches on the wrong team. And we have seen Tampa Bay in the past been willing to just give the role to one guy, but the most recent history has been that they're going to put the best guy in the most high leverage spot. And that changes day to day and week to week. And it seems unlikely anybody on this team gets 20 saves. And while you're obviously also drafting skills that aren't saves, the most important thing when you draft a closer is that they get some saves. And
right.
And so right. I tend to go with guys who are a little bit less skillful, but have a little bit better role.
Yeah. They're like the Rays, the Mariners, there's a couple other organizations, the Reds, except minus the good pitcher part. But they're all committees. They're all committed mm-hmm. to that a little bit there. So let's talk a little Mariners. Uncle Ted wants to ask about Prelander Baroa. He's a Rule 5 pick joining Seattle. He wasn't a Rule 5 pick. I'm mm-hmm. sorry. They protected him from the Rule 5 draft. I misspoke. I don't think he's going to make the team out of spring training. We'll see. He's got nasty stuff, 53 Ks and 35 innings at AA, but also 25 walks in the same span. So probably not going to be factoring in that bullpen. But guys that are, including Andrés Muñoz and Paul Sewald, but, I see both go in the top 12, 13 rounds. They could both be worth it. There is a scenario where that works. It involves them both getting lots of wins, I think, to make up for the lack of full-time saves. Because we know that they're not, we know for sure that in the past they have not had a singular closer. That this is someone that split the saves, not just two ways, but often three and four ways. So it might be Sir not appearing in this film, not just those two.
Yeah, and they're also a team that likes to trade. And so would it shock you if they brought in a guy halfway through the season to compete with them?
Right.
Hey, we're on the cusp of winning this division, taking it away from the Astros. We're going to bring in a Kenley Jansen-esque type player for the ninth inning. I know that, especially Munoz with his strikeout upside, has a lot of ways of returning the value from your draft cost, even if he isn't the guy getting all the saves or if he's sharing the role. But that still leaves you with a deficit in saves more than likely, unless he's your third closer. And I just hate drafting that way. And so I really liked guys like Sewald and Munoz last year when you were getting them outside of like the top 200, 250 picks. I don't want to pay a top 200 price for that.
No, I hear you. I hear you. But man, it's tempting. I've done it with Munoz and Fairbanks a little bit, but usually more closer to like 150 to 200 range and not the 100 to 150 range. And I think, it's what you're giving up. It's a stud starter. It's a full-time hitting outfielder that does, at least three categories. Cause as the draft goes on, I find like by round 18, I'm very I'm not really finding hitters that I'm like, yes, I can't wait to get this hitter. Whereas I can find pitching, I can find someone that's got interesting skills. They might be a little bit more cheaper retail price there. So, but in Seattle, hell, they traded away Kendall Graveman and added Diego Castillo in the course of a couple of days 2 years ago. So we know that they're capable. They have a wheeling and dealing GM, and that kind of works against us sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that's like the hard part about the Dodgers right now is because like some people are getting really excited by like Evan Phillips, and I'm just so worried that we're going to see a Kimbrel situation again, or they are going to just split it and you're screwed. Just these unsettled situations, I rarely dive into them at a high cost. If I'm not having to spend, a 15th or, lower draft pick on it, then yeah, sure. I'll take a gamble here. You're going to drop half of those guys anyways after the 15th round. The prices on guys like Sewald and Munoz or Johan Duran, I just can't do it because I don't know for sure that they've got those roles.
Yeah, that's right. Another franchise where we don't know who's got the roles, the White Sox, unfortunately. Liam Hendricks, we don't know when he's going to come back. We don't know, who's going to step in first. They've even outright said that there's going to be a committee of sorts, or they're not going to name a full-time closer. I think that's a better way of phrasing it. But between Kendall Graveman, Ronaldo Lopez, Sir, anybody else that I haven't mentioned, who do you like there?
I have been drafting Graveman in places, but once they said there isn't going to be a full-time closer, I was like, I'm just going to stay out of this situation. I think the White Sox are going to be better just by positive regression in the luck factor. I mean, they just got so unlucky with all the injuries all at the same time last year. Like, I feel like it's going to be a better team. But there's also a chance it's not. These are a lot of, you know, young guys who are unproven, who have had injury issues and things like that. And so what if they stink again and then they're splitting the saves? Right. Again, I'm probably staying away from this. Ronaldo Lopez has been like the hot name recently. I don't know that I think they want him to be the closer. I think they want him to be kind of the fireman guy who can sometimes come in for more than an inning, who can get him out of a jam in the seventh. So I think Graveman's probably the first guy up, but if Aaron Bummer took the role or Joe Kelly, or they just split all this around the entire bullpen, I would not be surprised.
Yeah, I hear you. And Reynaldo Lopez, he is climbing. In the seven RotoWire online championship drafts we've seen since in the last week, maybe it's only in the last 3 or 4 days, he's up to 312. Still after Graveman, but I might have been guilty of some of that myself. But anyways,
at 312 though, that's not like a bad gamble. Like if you're the guy you got to pick 312, especially when a 12 teamer doesn't work out, you're not sweating it. So like, I'll take that gamble at 312 and be like, okay, I'm going to know probably in the first 2 weeks whether or not I can drop him for the next guy.
Yeah, and keep in mind, in the RotoWire Online Championship, it's only 12 teams. So we're talking 30 rounds, 12 teams, 360 players. Anything in the threes is just is a flyer. And I, and that extends a little bit of strategy in a 12-teamer versus a 15-teamer like TGFBI. I'm far more inclined to get one closer and wait, or just wait on closers period, kind of go volume later, try to saves will come into the league. It's a statement that Matthew Berry made one point in time, and it's been repeated in so many different contexts and misused in so many different contexts like this one right now. But you know, it's true. It's a lot easier to try to fab saves in this format than it is in say in TGFBI or in the main event where you got the 15 teamer, and easier still in a league where you don't have an overall component.
Yeah, and I think what people forget about the Matthew Berry don't pay for saves moniker was he was talking about like 10-team ESPN leagues.
Right.
So like he wasn't talking about your 15-team leagues where, you know, like you said, it becomes a lot more difficult to get those saves off the waiver wire, especially because you're competing with a bunch of other people who may or may not have saves already. You're going to pay for saves one way or another. You either pay for them at the draft table or you pay for them in FAB. I personally am the kind of person who wants to pay for him at the draft table so I can use my FAB to patch up any sort of holes that may have appeared via injury or bad drafting or whatever. Right. And so I have no problem spending a high price on a closer, especially in these deeper 15-team leagues. The 12s, I kind of do what you said. Like I try to get one really good guy, and then usually I'm sprinkling in other shots because there are more options usually on the waiver wire.
Yeah, and TGFBI, I'm going to go with the one closer strategy because I think the second closers are expensive. I got Class A at 3.3. First time I've gotten Class A this year, and I kind of view him as equal to Diaz, so I would have taken one or the other there if they were there, and if not, I would have waited. But now, that allowed me to kind of avoid paying the prices for Fairbanks, Munoz, all that class of relievers. Even like Daniel Bard, I passed on him in the 11th round. I could have gotten him, but I just, again, I feel like there's an opportunity cost when you take that second closer and a 15 teamer.
Yeah. So I got Rossi Iglesias. I almost was gifted Jordan Romano, who like fell into the fourth round. I was just praying he made it to me. He didn't quite get there. I think Rossi Iglesias is an elite closer that is kind of being depressed in value a little bit because he wasn't the closer last year. Right. Or after the trade, he wasn't the closer out last year. And then I ended up with Scott Barlow as my second closer. And I don't feel super good about that, but
Chapman's trash. You're fine.
And that's what I think too. I think he is trash. And I also think there's a chance that the Royals go, we're going to capitalize on Scott Barlow's value and try to get something and maybe trade him to a team like the Dodgers. Interested in putting in that kind of high level guy. So I feel okay about that, and I'll probably take a gamble or two towards the end of the draft on a guy I think could potentially be a third, but I very rarely leave a 15-team league like TGFBI or a main event without two guys I feel pretty confident in.
Okay. I've gone different ways. The main event last year in one league, I went Liam Hendricks in the third. Another, I went Barlow was my first one in the ninth, and I didn't have a second one. There were some specs in the reserves that didn't pan out, but then I picked up Clay Holmes. I picked up others, and others sometimes worked. A lot of times they did not, but and in fact, had I gotten the one that worked, I would have done a lot better than I did, which was still pretty good. But you know, it's that was the difference between me finishing third in my league and winning my league, I think. But we're not going to lament over that. We're going to let it go someday.
I was in both Scott's mains, so that tells you exactly how my main event season went last year.
Yeah, that's a bad draw to get him in both.
And I drafted next to him in both.
Oh, double ouch. I mean, yeah, good guy. Scott Jensen is a wonderful guy. And
he's a fantastic guy. Yeah. I mean, I love having, you know, drinks with him out of the bar after, you know, the main. I don't want to be sitting there with him during it, even though it was probably the most fun snake draft I've ever been a part of. It was just a fantastic group.
You had the loudmouth league. You had all the talking heads and a moderator, and that is the best moderator at the NFPC too. So, and Brady Tinker, so very loud and projects, and he announces a pick, the whole room hears it, and all of a sudden is like, oh, I got to make sure I got, where is he on my list, and all that. He has that effect.
Yeah, it was a blast. I mean, Govier, Sporer, Dustin Comis, Dave Potts, Dalton Del Don, Scott Jensted. Like, it just and I think we had Tanner Bell and Jeff Zimmerman. Like, it was just an insanely fun group, and really, really a bunch of really, really good drafters as well. So I'm really hoping I don't get that league again this year.
Yeah. Although it is a blast, but you're right. But you know, that's the thing, is live drafts are just insane. So you got to go do it there. Do it one time. If you're ever going to play the main event, try to make a live draft either in Vegas or in New York. It's a completely different thing. We're going to talk about how TGFBI changes Justin's draft strategy, or his approach, maybe not necessarily strategy, but his preparation. But first, a quick note from our friends at Fantrax. Fantrax is the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry, offering great fantasy experience for your dynasty, keeper, redraft, and best ball leagues. Mentioned it before, I'll mention again, they were huge for us during the pandemic, running our Tout Wars auction leagues. Their auction room is excellent. Are you coming from another service? Fantrax makes it easy. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues and customize if needed. Fantrax offers the most in-depth player pool in the industry, including minor league players. Do you need a customizable commissioner service for your fantasy league? Fantrax offers more customization than any other platform. Waivers, categories, scoring system, schedule. Fantrax offers custom solutions for all that and more, and it's all free. Sign up for free today and be entered to win an official MLB signed jersey from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Simply go to fantrax.com/rotowire and sign up today. That's fantrax.com/rotowire. Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports. Our podcasts are hosted on the Blue Wire Network. We appreciate them for doing that, so we play their ads.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And thank you for your indulgence there on the Blue Wire Network. Talking with Justin Mason, proprietor, founder, host of TJFBI, Friends with Fantasy Benefits, Sleeper in the Bus podcast. Follow him on Twitter, as always, at Justin Mason, FWFB. Let's talk about just how it's impacted you, how TJFBI has impacted you. How does it influence your draft prep? How does it influence how you play?
I think TJFBI is the kind of demarcation line of when I move from learning the draft pool and kind of playing ADP games with the draft pool and drafts to going and getting my guys. Once like TGFBI hits and we start getting into those drafts after that, I'm kind of caring less and less about the ADP and kind of just caring more and more about what I think. That is something that I didn't necessarily do until a few years ago, right? Where I, like, I would always kind of try to play the, and I made the mistake with like the year I had Cedric Mullins, you know, as a potential breakout, and he did break out. Like I played those ADP games and messed up and didn't get him in any of my mains. And so like,
that's brutal. He was your guy and it's someone else benefits from your guy. Oh, that's just the worst.
And so I now am, so TGFBI has been a part of that process and going, okay, once TGFBI hits, I'm going to get my guys. I don't care about the ADPs. You know, I'm not going to, you know, take, you know, this, who I think is this year, Cedric Mullins in the third round, but like, I'm not going to say, oh, I can get him at pick 400, you know, at you know, 275, I'll just pop it and say, this is my guy. And I'm making sure I'm leaving with him. And I think that's been a big influence for me because I've been in too many TGFBI leagues or main event leagues where because these are public facing leagues, especially TGFBI more so than something like the main event, everybody kind of knows who's in their league and what they kind of like. And we follow each other on Twitter. And so I think you have to just be very resolute in your convictions about who you like and who you don't and just go for it, as opposed to saying, oh, you know what, I'm gonna try to lay low and get this guy next round or in two rounds. Just go get your guys.
Yeah, I think that's important. ADP is a great tool. It's helpful for knowing tiers and things of that nature. But yeah, it can cause you to miss players if you think, oh, I'm comfortable. I've got it here. I don't need, you know, and maybe it's even like, oh, I don't want to set the min pick on it. Well, sometimes setting the min is the only way you're going to get the guy. I mean, because the later we get into draft season, the more you've talked about a player, the more other people have talked about the player, the more the player is going to rise or more as circumstances have changed. So it can be dangerous. And I've missed out on some players because of the very same reason.
Yeah. And I just never want to leave a draft feeling like, oh, I regret not making the moves that I did.
Yeah.
And I've left too many drafts going, you know, over the, you know, 20 something years I've been playing fantasy where I was like, oh man, had I just, you know, pulled the trigger at the spot where I believed in the guy, then I'd feel a lot better about this team. And so TGFBI has helped me kind of mold into the player I want to be, which is aggressive at the draft table.
Yeah, I hear you on that. The other thing that this format generally does is it steers me away from stashing. I just don't stash anymore. And I know the same is true for you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was talking about this the other day, cause you know, there's no secret. My first main event league was an absolute disaster. I lit, you know, $1,600 or $1,700. I can't remember how much it was that year on fire and then bragged about it to everybody. like I was walking around after that first main event draft, you know, showing it off and I shouldn't have been, but, you know, I drafted the super, super risky team, like the team, you know, I wanted to win the overall in my first year. And I thought the way to do that was to put the Byron Buxtons and the Stantons and the DeGroms and, the, you know, those type of guys who have high risk, high reward on the same team together. And what I learned was that is not true, because while you may hit one of those guys, the chance you're going to hit all of them in the same year, you know, Mr. Garrett Hampson, is super, super unlikely, right? There's a professor from Stanford that talks about the chances of winning lottery are like going into an Olympic-sized swimming pool filled with M&Ms, and one of them is green, and you have to find that one blindfolded. Like, that's the chance if you have winning the lottery. It's the same kind of thing for an overall. If you put super, super risky teams, guys together, the chance you're going to hit them all at the same time is just super, super unlikely. So
right.
It's definitely taught me, you know, TGFBI, NFBC has taught me to be a lot more conservative in my play. Because you look at some of the teams that win these overalls, whether it's like, you know, Todd Zola and Clay Link in TGFBI, or, you know, Bob Kramatola, guys like that, Phil Dussault in, you know, the main event. You look at those teams at the end of the year and you go, man, this team is a little boring, but it just racked up plate appearances and racked up innings. And that's how you win these leagues.
I was just going to say that that last fact is huge. Every time you go back and look at a league standings, you'll see they're usually leading the league in plate appearances. They're almost always leading the league in innings pitched. Not always. Mm-hmm. Doug Dennis says hello in AL Tout Wars. But, but it's and some of that's injury luck. Some of that's the design, though. And it's finding players that have roles, known roles. And yeah, it's great when you know, Mike Trout broke out second half in his rookie year, just won people leagues. And I think after him, I think we had 3 years in a row of people just drafting rookie after rookie after rookie in the 15th round, thinking, okay, this is the number one prospect. I'm gonna get him. I'm guilty of it. I did it. I lost to someone who caught me with Trout that year. And you know, it's not fun, but you know what? What is fun is seeing like someone else having to wait for their prospect until September. And maybe there's less roster manipulation now than there used to be, but it still exists.
Absolutely. Cause there's so much money involved. I limit myself to one stash in an NFBC contest. So I go, you know, I'll go on my bench of, you know, seven, I'll do three hitters, three pitchers and a stash. So I don't count that towards one or the other. But it's also, I also know that, hey, if I get in trouble early on in my main event or in my TGFBI league, that guy needs to be droppable too. Like, I need to be able to move on, because what happened to me in my 2019 main event wasn't the injured guys that I drafted. It was all the guys who got injured in April after I drafted other injured guys. Because he goes, well, I can make it until this guy gets up or until this guy's healthy.
You don't turn injuries off. It's not like a video game. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You don't get to just say, well, the rest of my team's not going to get injured. I had an injury happen during that draft. Like, you know, I drafted a second catcher and he got his wrist broken before we finished the draft in spring training. So like, injuries are going to happen. So don't invite that extra injury profile to your team already.
Yep. Yep. And it's so true. It's so, so, so true. And it happens all the time. By the way, Joel Honard says it was, he learned that it was Ryan Braun. Right team, wrong player. It was Brett Laurie is the guy that I bought in on the hype and overhyped in AL Tout Wars. And, you know, he had that half a season before and pushing up to third round prices and all that. It was Brett Laurie that was the guy. It even predated Ryan Braun. He goes, I'm that old, by the way. And I think that's a reminder, but I appreciate you remembering the Blog Talk Radio show. That was a fun time. So when we were a couple of years in the serious darkness there, but we emerged clean on the other side. How about closers? Do you draft closers differently at all? I guess we talked about that a little bit earlier. So I don't need to ask that again. So let's scratch that question. How about aces? Do you draft aces differently?
I definitely draft them a little bit differently than I would in most leagues, especially when we start talking about, I think this year's a little different though. So it's a little weird. The questions are weird. Typically, yes. In a traditional year, I would be drafting aces much, much differently than I normally would in, you know, TGFBI or in any sort of NFBC contest, because those starting pitchers get pushed up and you don't want to be left behind. This year, I feel like is a year where you can get away with not doing that. Like, I have spent most of my draft season not drafting an ace in the first three or four rounds of drafts and felt really okay. I did this in TGFBI this year where my first starting pitcher was in round five. It took Alek Manoah. And I feel pretty good at it because the level of starting pitching is really good at the top. So unless I'm getting a deal on a Corbin Burns or a Garrett Cole or one of the other guys who are really, really good, I'm likely waiting this year, which feels odd, and it may turn out to be wrong because there are, definitely have been years in the past where we felt really good about the starting pitching depth and then been completely wrong about what that actually looked like once the season started. So, but at the moment, I have been a lot more conservative in my starting pitching kind of approach than I usually am in a league like TGFBI or main event.
Indeed. Indeed. Good stuff there. Yeah. And I always say, if I'm going to wait on my first ace and maybe late, even wait on the second one, then I'm going to make it up in volume in the teens. So that way I don't have to stream later on. Cause that's a nightmare when you don't have your studs at the top of the rotation and you don't have the depth and you're having to rely on the waiver wire. Find a 10 teamer if you can stream. And a 15 team with the main event and an overall component, yeah, good luck.
It was a nightmare last year, just trying to stream.
Yeah, it was. It absolutely was. All right, we're going to wrap it up on that point. Good stuff, as always. Justin, I know you're a busy man. Thank you for spending some time with us. Thanks for getting your wife hooked on fantasy baseball so you can play more leagues too. Appreciate that. And all the podcasts and all the things you do for charitable reasons as well. We appreciate everything.
I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
No problem. Justin Mason, everybody. TGFBI at Justin Mason FWFB. All right. Coming up tomorrow, we got Clay and Todd. And then, of course, over the weekend, we got the former Roto World guys now with us. We got them. And then Scott and I will be back on Sunday night. So we're very happy with everything here. So thanks for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Take care.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.